This week on Amazingly Terrible, we're watching the movie Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Be excellent to each other.
Party on, dudes.
It's a good strategy, honestly, for life.
You're listening to Amazingly Terrible, the podcast that asks, if George Carlin came from the future and gave you a time machine, would you actually research your history project? Or would you become a lone wanderer in the time stream? My name's Adam.
My name is Matt.
I'm Mike.
Right over each other.
My name is Mike S. Preston Esquire.
Fucking like, Mike David over there.
We're just all talking over each other today.
Evidently.
It's gonna be a good one. You know, one day we will fully do the intro. We will actually.
No, we ain't.
One day we will learn how to podcast. One day.
No, we won't.
One day.
We're just a bunch of... All right, you want me to just jump right into this? By the way, this is Socrates Johnson. I've got the summary this week.
What's up, Socrates?
Hey, what's happening, man? We're just going to launch into it.
I was going to say, do it. Let's just run through it, and then...
Yep, we're going to do the Bill and Ted in 5 minutes here, so... Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure came out in 1988. It was kind of one of the 1980s coming-of-age high school comedies that seemed to be super prevalent in that decade. And the story follows our two young heroes. We've got Bill and Ted, who are two, I guess they're burnouts. It never really says exactly what they are, but they're more interested in starting this band, Wild Stallions, than they are actually learning anything in school.
Well, they're not bright. They're a little dim.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They're not a Spicoli. Like, they're not the stoner. They're not the party animal. They're just two kind of nothings.
Yeah, I'm sure that opening scene where their garage is completely filled with smoke isn't a metaphor for anything.
Well, it's because they burned out their fucking electronics, man. Come on. So,
yeah,
anyways,
man.
in their history class, they are essentially informed by their teacher, Mr. Ryan, that they are going to flunk the class, and if they flunk the class, then they're going to flunk out of whatever grade they're in. Through a couple of, I think they're in 11th grade. I don't think they're seniors, and I don't think they're in 10th grade because they make a comment about Bill's mom at some point in time. But anyways, they go home. I think they're juniors. They go home. They're pretty dejected. They're trying to figure out, hey, how are we gonna essentially pass this oral exam? And they don't know a friggin' thing about history.
It's an oral presentation. They have to prepare a demo.
Yeah, essentially, the demonstration is who is this famous person in history, and if they were transported into San Dimas 1988, how would they like San Dimas? So through a very awkward trope that the 80s used to do, they find themselves in a Circle K parking lot, and in the Circle K parking lot, all of a sudden George Carlin shows up in a phone booth for all of our young listeners before the days of cell phones. Payphones used to be in these porta-potty-like structures that you would go and put a quarter in the phone, and then it had a large Bible-like book that had everybody in the area's phone number in it, and you could make a call from it. So George Carlin shows up.
You could also, Superman could also change in there.
Yeah.
George Carlin shows up in a 1988-themed cyberpunk what-the-fuck-is-he-wearing outfit where he's just wearing a lot of clothes that are three sizes too big and then a duster.
And everything's got to be shiny.
He looks comfortable.
This is a really mix of 80s and 90s style.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, this is what everybody thought the future was going to be in the 90s. So just big, boxy clothes.
Yeah.
And
like,
they were right.
Dusters. Everybody thought like fucking high neck to mid shin coats were going to be the shit. They're not. Yeah. So he shows up to him and essentially informs them that he's from the future.
Of duster coats said otherwise.
Nice.
That's what you wear daily.
He informs them that they are actually very important to future society and that he's there to essentially offer up the use of this time-traveling phone booth so that they can go around and they can go find and interview historical figures throughout history so that they can go and pass their history report. Because as it's revealed later in the film, that if they were to split up, because Ted's dad, who's the authoritative, just absolute dickhead of a father that you saw in a bunch of 80s and early 90s films, was going to send him to military school.
Yeah.
He's just a fucking piece of shit.
Yeah, he's a dad.
I'm a dad. I don't think I'm a
person. Oh, I'm sorry. He's an 80s dad. He's an 80s dad.
He's an 80s dad. Yeah,
he's my dad.
Too.
It's really
but
what
he's
it
not
comes
even a
to.
Good cop. Like, he just seems slimy. Like, he doesn't have the solid dick broom of a mustache that, like a real cop would have. He's just a fucking piece of shit.
And
anyways,
we know he's a bad guy because he's balding, per Mike's theory
yes.
on evil. So.
So, anyways, they then get access to the time machine, and they go on this adventure through history, and they go and they find all these different figures that actually were foreshadowed because they were written on the chalkboard in Mr. Ryan's class. So they initially go back to 1879. They pick up Billy the Kid. Then they go back to, like, 410. They pick up Socrates. Then they end up in medieval England, and they just meet two princesses, whatever.
They get a meet cute.
Yeah, they get to meet the quasi love interest in the film. Then
I think it's clearly
they bounce out of
love interest, but they just have no time to develop a relationship.
Yeah, yeah. No.
There's
like hijinks. Yeah, there's hijinks in each of these areas too. They spend a lot of time in the England one to really no effect. They then grab a bunch of figures throughout history. They grab Genghis Khan, Sigmund Freud, Abraham Lincoln, Joan of Arc, Beethoven, right? Was it Beethoven or Mozart?
Yeah,
one of the two famous composers.
Because they could hear.
Yeah, they get all these guys. Oh, and then when the very first place they went is they found Napoleon, and then the time warp essentially dragged Napoleon back to San Dimas. So in between scenes of them going around and then picking up these historical figures, there are like hijinks with Napoleon going on back with Ted's younger brother, who is tasked with watching Napoleon back in 1988, San Dimas, California. So they get this group of people, they bring them back, they then go give them a tour of 1988 San Dimas, and in a very, very on-the-nose 1988 way, they take them to the mall. And that's where they show them what society is like in 1988. The entire time that this is going on, they're running against a diminishing clock because they have to essentially do this oral presentation. And just essentially as the clock expires, Bill and Ted show up with the figures from history, and they put on this just absolute whiz bang, really well done from the students. And actually, it was a really nice part of the movie. Like, they do the whole thing with the historical figures, and then they win the day. They get their A pluses. They send the figures back in history. George Carlin shows up with the two rando British princesses who are now their girlfriends, evidently, to create this band Wild Stallions, which brings peace, prosperity, planets into alignment, the end of war, disease, STDs, and everything else in the future. And film ends with everything's going to be all right. That's the baseline for what Bill and Ted was.
Impressively fast. We got through this in record time.
Well, I've been Adam.
I've been Matt.
Dude, it's funny. Like, okay, you want to talk about this movie? Let's talk about this movie.
No, yeah, yeah. I think that is a good question, though. Is it a good movie? That's an excellent question.
I both liked, I really, really liked a couple of parts of this movie. Actually, more than a couple of parts of this movie. And I also really didn't like a couple of parts of this movie. So I don't know. As the credits rolled, I had a smile on my face. So I think I did like the movie. I don't know if I liked it.
That doesn't make
it
a good movie. It makes it enjoyable.
Yeah.
You know, it makes it an enjoyable experience.
Yeah, I guess that's what it is I enjoyed it. And I do remember watching this as a kid. And what I will say is, as an adult, I did not find the majority of it funny. I found it bemusing. There's like a smile on my face, but I think a lot of the running jokes in the movie, there was only one that I laughed out loud, and I can't remember what it was.
Yeah,
most of them were just like, I was just like, meh.
Yeah.
Oh, no, the one I laughed out loud is when Billy the Kid, Socrates, and Sigmund Freud went up to the two girls in the mall, and Sigmund Freud is holding a fucking corn dog.
Yeah.
He says, "You've got a case of hysteria." And he lowers it to horizontal, mimicking an erection. And I fucking lost it there. I was like, that's a good fucking joke. Like, that shows some highbrow education. Like, you have to understand what they thought hysteria was back in the day and what they thought the cure for hysteria was. And then Sigmund Freud with his whole, like, you just want to fuck everything that moves. Like, that was a good joke. That was a very good joke. Other than that, the rest of them, I was like, meh.
I'm kind of with you. It's enjoyable. It moves along really fast. Mm-hmm. Like, they cram a ton. The only time it drags is really when they were in England.
And that really was like, what, 15 minutes? It doesn't drag at all. Like, the pacing of this film is great. Like, there's never a point where I'm like, okay, I'm done with this storyline. Like, you're always looking forward to the next thing, you know? And then they did a lot of fun stuff, too, like, where they brought Beethoven back, and they had him playing the multi-stage synths. Like, I thought that was pretty fun, you know? Like,
yeah,
I was like,
yeah.
That's what Beethoven probably would do. He'd be like, hell yeah, give me like six synthesizers. I'm going to fuck you up.
He'd get deep into the technical.
Yeah. How Derek, for you, how foundational was this for you as a kid? Because you saw it when you were pretty young, right?
So this movie came out in 89. I would have been six. I really didn't watch this movie until probably middle school. And by that point in time, there were other... Okay. I guess you could say much more foundational movies. Bill and Ted, I remember the cultural phenomenon that it was. But there wasn't, for me, it wasn't like this was a film. You know what I'm saying? Like, this wasn't one of the films. There were other ones that, at that time, they would have been more of like the 94, 95 time range. But I think if you were somebody who is in, you know, what we consider middle school now, like 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, early high school, this movie would be pretty awesome.
That's what it was for me. Yeah, for sure. I think I saw this in like, I want to say third grade, maybe. And is that too early?
Fourth or fifth. That would have been a little too early. Yeah, you would have been 9 or 10.
No, third grade. I guess it would be right.
Yeah, I wasn't very bright, too. They helped me back.
So it'd be fourth, fifth grade. I remember this came out when I was in Germany. So I definitely watched it in Germany. And I think that we got it on tape somehow. I remember watching it several times. But like going back through and watching it now, I think I'd mentioned that I'd watched it somewhat recently, like 4 or 5 years ago. And that it like held up pretty well. Because I agree with you guys. I think that it's a good movie. I think it's an entertaining movie. I don't think it's necessarily like a good movie. It's not breaking any barriers when it comes to like cinema or anything like that. But
it's
the thing
surprisingly
that struck me is,
fun science fiction. Like they have a TARDIS.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like there's a lot of science fiction references in it. But sorry, go ahead.
I forgot how much of this movie I used to quote constantly when I was a kid. And I had a bunch of memories flooding back to me from like me as a kid running around in Germany, playing with the other kids on the playground, throwing out lines from this. We used to play a game where we were traveling through time, and I always used to play Genghis Khan, and I had a big, like a giant poster board tube that I'd run around and whack people with.
I remember.
I was like the biggest kid, so. No, this is in Germany. This is before I met you. So.
Oh, no, no. This was high school.
right.
Yeah, you kind of did childish stuff up into high school.
No, that's true. No, in high school was when I got my sword and we were actually like sword fighting with some regularity. But no, I just
is that
I
when you stabbed your
much...
calf?
Yes, it was. my poor little calf, little mooey. Yeah, I forgot just like how much of this was just like in my brain. So. Mike and David, did you guys have a similar reaction to it, or did you guys not necessarily have this movie down when you were young enough to be like foundational for you or formative?
Was it a seminal work or a seminal work for you?
Yeah, I did not have the tape, so I could not watch it repeatedly and internalize it the same way Adam did.
Yeah,
I was pretty sheltered as a kid, so I don't recall seeing it in the theater. I don't remember when I saw it, but I was much older. Still just as impressionable, though, because I quoted it whenever I first saw it, too.
Oh, yeah.
And I realize now that most of my memories of Bill and Ted are actually from The Bogus Journey, the second movie,
That's the metaphysical one.
That's the one with the robots and, yeah, the evil
in heaven and hell.
See,
it's basically Planescape. That's what I remember. Like, it's playing D&D 3.5 and going through the Planescape series.
Nice. I'd buy that. So, yeah, I remembered more as I started watching this movie, but, yeah, all my old memories. Number two.
Really, that's interesting. Because, yeah, number two sticks in my mind a little better. I think probably because we were both pretty young for one. But I remember, like, wanting to see this movie and thinking it was so cool. And now, as an adult, I don't know. There's something about it just makes me cringe.
Yeah.
Well, our brains finally
finished developing. Let's get into that. So. This is what I've been waiting for. Fuck yeah.
What?
Okay.
Let's talk about Missy. Because what the fuck?
You mean Mike's cousin? Yeah? All right.
Oh, boy. Like, so this is the point. Like, there were parts of this movie that I was just like, whew, that did not age well.
Yeah.
So Bill's new stepmom is a younger female.
A former classmate.
She was a classmate.
So this is where I said I don't know what age they are. They said, wasn't she a senior when we were freshmen? So she's 4 years older than them. Yeah. And you would think, like, hey, if you are almost graduating seniors, well, then she's a graduating university student. And not that makes it any better, but, like, you're at least firmly into your 20s.
She's firmly into something. Or the other way around.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Lord.
And they make a bunch of jokes about, like, it starts off.
They objectify
her at first.
Like, the amount of objectification is grisly. Like,
oh,
they
yeah.
Are,
oh,
yeah.
Oh,
they're
it's
very
fucking unbelievable. Yes. Yeah. So it starts out where they call her Missy, and then she's like, Mom. And then Ted gives him a bunch of shit. And then she comes up into the room later where they're trying to prep to study, and she's like, I made you sandwiches. And kind of in a minor bemusement, like, she burns some grilled cheese, but then she, like, bends over to give him the sandwiches.
The burnt grilled cheese, when I was a kid, did not actually register as being, like, a ruined food to me. When it was presented, when I was a kid, I thought this was, like, some sort of, like, specialty sandwich of some type that had, like, chocolate on the outside of it. And I was like, oh, this would be great. Yeah, I don't know. I was nine. I was a child at the time, so.
So anyways,
that's
but,
a
like, but like when I saw the sandwiches, I was like, oh shit, I forgot about those sandwiches. Like, that's how much
so
it stuck in
the objectification of them looking down her V-cut sweater blouse.
Oh,
and
God,
like,
yeah.
And they don't pull any punches too. Like, it's not like a little bit of fucking cleavage. Like, you just see him hanging free and you're just like, okay. And then his dad comes in, and his dad is like 45. Yeah. And they just keep the joke rolling.
His dad looks like Jim Henson wearing Mr. Rogers' clothes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it does. Oh my God. Yeah. David, nice. Yes. That's exactly what it
was.
Perfect.
Well, just keep fucking going.
And I want to do this once timestamp here, if I can.
He's living his best life, though.
I mean, hold on, let me keep going, because they all come in and she's giving them the sandwiches, and all three males in the scene are mesmerized by her to the point that the dad reaches into his fucking pants, pulls out a 20 and says, effectively,
go
get
away.
The fuck out of here. I'm going to bottom her out for the next half hour.
It's going to happen in
your room.
Then they make another joke about it. Ted is like, hey, your dad's really going for it in your room on your bed. And Bill's like, shut up, Ted. And I'm like, what the fuck?
I don't remember banter like that back in high school. Ever.
Yeah.
We never, you know. We're...
I remember.
But the flip side to this coin is that the character Missy actually seems like she is a caring mother to Bill.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
she wants to be a motherly figure towards Bill. That's why she keeps on correcting
him. Like,
saying,
she's actually a really positive film mom. Like, she makes him snacks after school. Like, at one point, they go back to the house, and she's like, no, you're not going out of here until you do your chores. And then she makes the boys do the chores. And then they're like, can we get a ride in the station wagon? And she's like, okay, let's go. Like, it's just this fucking yin and yang the whole time through. I'm just like, ugh, it's like a 20-year-old that fucking dad is just taking a pound town, but like...
That first scene, where the dad is in the bedroom, and like they're doing a little bit of flirty thing, and the dad gives him a 20 and tells him to leave. It's at like minute 12:22 is what I've got on here. The utter look of disappointment on Missy's face when the boys have to leave. Tell me one of two things. Either she really is not into banging Bill's dad that much, and she's kind of upset that like she's gonna have to do like this wifely duty when she was like trying to be more motherly, or she wanted to have an audience for what was going on. I don't
know.
But she looks very disappointed here. She looks very upset that the boys are leaving.
I think the character was written to crave essentially male attention because she tries to saddle up to Mr. Ryan later on in the film. She rolls right up to him, plops right down next to him, and is like, remember me? And he's like, ugh.
And she's like, no, long time no see. It's, well, you know, if you haven't seen one of your beloved high school teachers in a while, I'm just, you saw him, you'd be like, hey dude, what's
going on? I'm just saying, I think the way the character was written was both positive and severely negative.
I don't see much of this as positive. Let's just say that, like, if there's a, it's not like they just failed the Bechdel test here. Like, they took the test out and peed on it in an alley.
Beat it with ran over a few times. Yeah. So on the subject of the female characters here, one thing when I was a kid was I never understood why neither one of them went after Joan of Arc, because I thought that she was more attractive and had more agency than the two princesses, who they fell in love with when they like saw them on a balcony about a football field away. Like, they never actually like got a good look at them when they first fell in love.
No, yeah. They just, the first girls to pay attention to them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought Joan of Arc was hot. She really rocks the tomboy cut.
Plus, you know.
Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah, you can say that.
You can say tomboy. Yeah.
Okay.
Wait, when did tomboy attractive. Turn into a
Wait
bad
a minute.
Kid?
I don't know. You were attracted to a professional actor? That's insane.
Oh my god.
Oh my goodness.
Were you not attracted to Missy? Did you think Missy was hot?
I'm not going to talk about that.
I feel like Joan of Arc was given the like late 90s teen rom-com treatment. Like, hey, let's cut your hair short and not put makeup on you. But then we like let your hair long and put a little makeup on you, you're a 10. Like, I was just like, come on, guys. Well, really?
I mean, the real Joan of Arc would have destroyed these children.
But one thing that it did nail really well was Napoleon.
Aside from the fact that Napoleon was actually not short.
No, he was average.
I'm sure you guys have heard
this.
He was average. Yeah, it was British propaganda. And of course, because the Brits were the ones who ultimately defeated him, everybody remembers him as being short. The other historical inaccuracy in the movie that I was just bemused with is Napoleon never wore a blue coat. He always wore a green one. It was a dark green. So if you look at any painting of Napoleon, he is in a green coat. And the reason that he wore green is the color of, at the time, the French artillery officer corps. And that's where he rose through the ranks. So he always wore his green coat as, like, I am at first an artillery officer, and then second, like, the, you know, the general of the army or whatever.
It
so
was an affectation.
He would never have worn... I know, but he would never have worn a blue. He would have worn a green.
That's probably why he was
so good
at logistics,
I was very bemused at his character where he won the Piggly Wiggly or whatever ice cream contest, and he put the button on
Ziggy
with his medals.
Piggy,
like,
Ziggy,
yeah.
Piggy,
and then Ziggy, he just, and they went to the water park. I was like, okay, yeah, like, this is entertainment.
He's having a good time.
Well, I did like the fact that he cheated at bowling, which I really enjoyed. Also, isn't bowling like an English sport? Wasn't it derived in England?
I have no idea where the origin of bowling comes. Like, hits human history.
The fact that he like cheated was something that I always like really found funny. I enjoyed that when I was a kid. And then like all the kids stitching him was a good time. But the thing that really struck me this time was like how when he was at Waterloo and he was like getting into the water slides and everything, how much he was interacting with the other kids. I forgot that like he picked up kids and were like running them up the
He started
slide
out
and like explaining to the kids like how the slides worked and how fun it would be and all that stuff. So
I absolutely picked up on that as a dad. Like
so he had,
the first
like, he had
the first time
arc.
Through he's like shoving him out of the way, and then there's at one point where he's explaining to a little girl who's probably about 5 or 6, like it's very clear by the body language, come and ride this slide, it's super fun, and he's carrying other ones up the same thing.
It's a ton of character development.
Here's my question. If you were Bill or Ted's, or Bill and Ted's,
together
teacher,
in the same flesh,
would you have passed them? Would you have actually given them an A on this presentation?
Because
to me, what this presentation screams was, oh, they went out and they hired a bunch of actors, and they had these actors do like a presentation for us. So they're basically trying to buy an A.
I mean, I would applaud their organizational and logistical skills. Like, have you ever tried to put on a play? Like,
I guess that's true. Yeah. In the fact they put on that like bitchin' light show, like last minute, it took them like 2 minutes to set it up. That
right.
Was a pretty good thing.
That was I think I would pass them on that. Now whether or not they like, wrote the whole show, okay.
Yeah.
That means they hired writers, which means they did it during a strike. So even more impressive.
That's right, there was a strike that went on in 1988, wasn't there?
Really?
There was. No. It affected Star Trek. No, there was. There was a writer's strike that affected the second season of Star Trek. That's the reason why they had a clip show in that season that like did nothing to actually further along the series at all. Yeah, there was I think it was 1988. I think there was 1988 writer's strike. Might have been 1989. But I guess I should say also, it did seem like they were giving a lot of good information during the report, though, as if they did learn something. So I guess that would have offset it. I probably would have failed them, though, because it was supposed to be a 15-minute report, and it obviously took them 2 hours to get through that whole presentation. So,
oh, you think you're like on time alone? That's the kind of teacher you are. You
exactly.
are like,
exactly.
I'm sorry.
You gotta learn this lesson, kids. You gotta, if it's 15 minutes, it's gotta be 15 minutes. That's the key to every good presentation.
Yeah, never excel, time. Children. Always meet expectations.
Yeah. Amazingly terrible. The podcast that knows what a good presentation is.
15 minutes.
<we're> at... Why do you think I was so quick tonight? We're at 32 minutes and 22 seconds. And for Amazingly Terrible, I've been Derek. See you next week.
Yeah. It's over.
I mean, there's really actually, honestly, not too much left to talk about it. It was a fun romp. A couple things to continue that I did appreciate is I appreciated the fact that there wasn't really much of the trope of like, hey, we're corralling these people who don't belong in this environment and they're doing nothing but fucking shit up, right? Like they're here and they're doing fucked up stuff. And they kind of screwed some stuff up at the mall, but they weren't like destroying it, you know? Like the maximum amount of destroying they did is Genghis Khan legitimately tried out a new war club on a mannequin and then put a football helmet and pads on and did a flip over a trampoline. Like that was it, you know?
So,
and then
I think they were probably going after him more for like shoplifting at that point in time than anything else.
Yeah.
Like initially they went there to stop him and then he was shoplifting.
Yeah. It wasn't, again, it wasn't that very tropey, like, oh, these people who don't belong here, let's arrest them for being not, you know, they don't belong here type thing.
Well, that's actually the question I had for that whole scene. Because we have Genghis Khan, he's trying out a new baseball bat, like a war club.
Did a little bit
you have
Genghis Khan.
You have Billy the Kid shooting a gun inside the mall, which is understandable. You have Socrates chasing
it's
after under, Billy
yeah,
the Kid.
It's, this is America.
No
understandable.
Oh my god, Billy the Kid shoots a gun in school at one point, and I was like, woof.
Oh yeah.
Woof.
Yeah.
That didn't age well.
That didn't age well at all.
But then you also have Joan of Arc, who had accosted a aerobics instructor, which makes sense. Abraham Lincoln, who is being accused of stealing an Abraham Lincoln outfit, which I guess we'd get the mall security involved. But fucking Beethoven was testing out keyboards at the request of the owner of the store. And then he was playing them too well. And then the owner of the store called security to come escort him out for no reason.
I don't even think the owner of the store.
He was shredding those keyboards. He was not testing them.
Shredding.
I don't even think the owner of the store called the security. I just think that he was just rolled up in it.
He did. You saw like the owner or whoever, the sales associate, whoever they might have been, was basically showing off the keyboards. Was like, yeah, they're good. Great. Check this out. And then, like, he's watching Beethoven playing and, like, rocking with him. And as the montage goes on, you see him talking to the security guard and, like, motioning to Beethoven, like, can you get this fucking guy out of here? He won't.
Oh, I guess I missed that part. Okay.
And it was like, fucking, you told him to play the goddamn piano. What the fuck is wrong with you? But anyway.
It's about moderation.
I yield the rest of my time.
There is a line that you don't cross. If you ask someone, to take a sip of a drink, you don't guzzle the entire thing down.
Oh.
Sometimes I do.
Well, you might not, but yeah.
I look them right in the eye when I'm doing it, too. I pour it sideways. I, like, pour it,
oh,
turn my head sideways.
Uh-huh.
Look them right in the eye while I'm pouring the drink down my throat.
I drink your milkshake.
And then you
all
the
over the
back
front
and
of your body.
Slowly wipe your mouth.
Yeah. Pick up one of the ice cubes and just drag it across my forehead. Whew. Beautiful.
I expect you to drag it across something else. Okay. So here's my theory. Similar theory that I had when we watched the cartoon. Bill S. Preston, Esquire.
All right, give your theory. I got to take the dogs out. They're bugging me. BRB.
Bill S. Preston Esquire is actually a genius. He is a lawyer that is doing a never been kissed, or a child prodigy lawyer who's doing like a never been kissed thing where he's going back to high school to try to experience the high school experience.
He's pulling a Billy Madison.
He's pulling a Billy Madison. Like a reverse Billy Madison, because he's actually smart, whereas Billy Madison was not. One of the reasons why I believe that is because he's Esquire, first off, so he's a lawyer. Secondly, he's the one that's doing the primary amount of talking during the presentation, as if he actually did know the subject pretty well. He was just sort of like faking being dumb so he could like meet up with Ted and like play around with Ted. Thirdly, he repairs a fucking time machine with bubblegum. So, Ted, or Bill rather, is actually a lawyer from the future that went back in time to meet up with Ted because he knew that he needed to start Wild Stallions with Ted. And that's the actual through line, the underlying untold story about this.
Now, you know the rest of the story.
Is that why it's not inappropriate for him to oogle his stepmom? Because in the future...
He's actually an old man.
Yeah, they're the same age now.
Yeah.
Is that him when he comes in? He plays his dad.
Oh,
is,
gross. He like killed his dad and took his place.
Yeah, he killed his dad
and his dad,
took his
and
place.
And he's actually a lawyer. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Maybe that's the case. Maybe that's like the untold story.
That's the horrible untold story.
You know what? Why do I not write fan fiction?
Ted's carnal lusts.
Bill's carnal lusts.
Bill's carnal lusts, yeah.
Bill's
also,
carnal
this is the first
lusts.
Time I realized that Ted's name was Ted Theodore. What was his last name?
Logan.
Logan? Yeah, Ted Theodore Logan. So he's Ted Logan.
Ted Logan.
Teddy Logan.
Well... I think that Ted doesn't have a middle name, so he just says Ted Theodore.
Oh, okay.
How does Bill have, like, a lawyer degree?
because he's from the future. He's a genius. He's like a Doogie Howser for law, basically. So he got his law degree when he was like 13, 14 years old.
Which is like how old he and Ted look in this movie.
Oh, yeah, they're like 15, 16.
Did that strike anyone else that they look like babies?
They did look very young.
How old were they in real life?
100 years old.
Well, I'm just wondering if it's the whole thing, like, back in the 80s, everyone just looked younger, and now everyone, you know, I don't know, like, back then we used to have 30-year-olds playing high schoolers in movies, and nowadays you actually have high schoolers playing high schoolers in shows and movies.
Yeah, I think that they were probably in their 20s at that point in time, because I know that...
The thing about high schoolers is they're not reliable, so that's why you get adults them.
Yeah, because their brain chemistry isn't set yet. So.
Yeah.
But no, I think Keanu Reeves got his start in Babes in Toyland, I think, which was like 1984, and I think that he was like 15 or 16 in that. Let me relook that up, because that was actually something that I had looked up for the cartoon Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Which you can also see, like, in the cartoon, how they are much more verbose, and that's kind of what was ruining the cartoon.
Yeah.
Because they exaggerated their speaking manner.
Yeah. They tried to play people who thought they were smart, but use, like, big words to say stupid things.
That sounds like me.
Yep.
I'm sorry.
Totally.
That audioizes like myself.
The fuck.
You are essentially accurate, my bodacious friend.
Yes.
Well, let's see. Are you a curly-haired blonde kid with hippie parents and befriended a clueless pretty boy with a very strict military father?
Yes. Jesus
oh,
Christ.
Oh, dear God. Holy shit.
Wait, what? Holy fuck. What are we talking about?
I always thought I was Ted.
That's the Bill to
my Ted. Yeah.
No, nice. Dude, you're Bill.
I'm Bill? Oh.
That's the Bill terrible. To my Ted, apparently. Yeah. That's
who had the dad that was consistently disappointed in him that Freud essentially analyzed him and then Bill was like, no, I just have a minor Oedipus. Oh, that was the other joke I laughed out loud at. Mm. When Freud was like, would you like to lay down? And he's like, no, I just have a minor Oedipus complex. And I was like, ugh!
I think that was the one that made me laugh. Because I was like, Bill's such an idiot that he doesn't know all of this other stuff, but he does know
what Oedipal complex.
He does know he wants to stuff his stuff.
And he's self-aware. He's self-aware enough to use it that way.
Exactly. In public, in front of an audience. Yeah.
So how well did that age? Is that less acceptable these days or more acceptable?
Having sex
with
your mom?
According to Pornhub, it's like nothing.
According to Pornhub, it's just nonstop stepmoms and stepsisters getting stuck in fucking dryers. So I think it aged well.
I don't know why people are marrying all these dumb step family people. Can't figure out how to get out of a dryer.
Can't change the lint trap. Yeah.
Yeah. Fucking. Well, now that I see that you're stuck there,
I guess I will do the insane thing. Our culture has not progressed.
Is there anything that was kind of on the fence back in the 80s that actually is more acceptable now? Because when David said that, it actually got me thinking. What has slipped, or you know? Gotten worse.
Gotten worse or gotten better?
Or, I mean...
People's acceptance of mental health issues.
What was acceptable then that's acceptable now? Yeah.
People's awareness, treatment of, and acceptance of mental health issues is significantly better.
I would also say that people's acceptance of LGBTQ type people. Like, yeah, you see it, like, riled up in the news, but, like, dude, they called each other a bunch of fucking F-words. And everybody went, it's funny. And nowadays we're like, oh, dude, you can't fucking say that.
I think Mike is asking the opposite, though. What in the 80s actually held up really well? Like, what in the 80s actually did
Oh.
What was acceptable by today's standards?
Star Wars.
Probably.
Oh yeah, the Star Wars thing.
Not having your credit score be your entire identity, because I don't think that was the case.
Yeah, you know what? Actually, I think one of the things that we could look back on the '80s and kind of take from it, at least from a television movie standpoint, and if everybody kind of did the pillars of it, not necessarily the individual actions, well, was just kind of the family structure that the '80s pushed out. Like, I'm not saying like dad is the working person and mom is, but just like, hey. Family, like, I think that was something that does hold up well.
But in the '80s, wasn't that like the start of the latchkey kids?
If it wasn't for the tireless work of the Fast and the Furious movies, family would have passed away a long time ago. They're what's holding family together.
That's right. The '80s set the threshold, and then fucking
we needed Vin Diesel. to teach us the importance of family.
Family. I mean, I guess the way it was portrayed on TV, probably, but at the same time, the '80s was like the start of the latchkey kids. I mean, that's one of the reasons why we all turned out the way we did, is because we kind of raised ourselves. So
it's when people started to have dual incomes. It's because people started to need dual incomes
because they needed it. Yeah.
Well, you're saying what was portrayed in the '80s as good and has continued, and I'm saying like kind of the '80s idea of the family sitcom. Were '80s families better than they are now? I don't know.
Yes,
I mean, hands down, 100%.
Families were better. Food was better. Music was better. Everything was better.
Maybe
fashion was not better.
Irony was better.
Acceptable authoritative figures like head of the class or the white shadow.
Wow.
Distressing. Also, I've seen neither of those.
Oh, you didn't watch Head of the Class when you were a kid?
No, man, I didn't have a TV.
That was one of the staples. That was one of the sitcom staples that I remember very fondly from the '80s. You have like the degenerate, somewhat stoner teacher that is very wise beyond his years, and he's like an out of work writer that decides to teach English, and he actually winds up teaching like AP English essentially. And all the kids are like super geniuses that like keep on like surprising him, but he teaches them about the real world. It's a good show. Had a really fat kid that used to be good with computers.
Wow.
I really identified with that guy. Yeah.
Oh.
1986. Yeah, I know. I'm not very good with computers, so I don't know why I identified with him.
You do just fine, buddy. Better than me.
I don't know about that.
I tried to ignore them.
Cheetah blood, but it won't go any faster.
I just think the '80s has a certain bit of nostalgia for kind of everybody who was there, and then a lot of people who weren't, as just a, which is funny because it wasn't necessarily a decade of positivity. That was more the '90s, but I think everybody remembers the '80s as like almost this like positive vibe.
There was a lot of economic development at that time. The economy was really booming in the '80s, so people remember that.
Well, it was coming right off of the Carter
years. This was all Reagan years.
One of the Carter years, there was like a lot of economic decline, and then it was coming back up because of Reagan. Yeah.
Not because of Reagan.
He was fucking over us for the long term, but. Yeah.
It wasn't bad, but the '90s were better in that regard. So, I don't know.
Yeah, with Clinton? Yeah.
I can't say much about the economic memories. Policy.
Yeah, dude, I was, seven when the '80s ended, and then 17 when the '90s ended? I didn't know shit from shit. I just knew that the '80s were a pretty good time, and so were the '90s.
I knew shit from shit. I was like, this is my second shit today. That's how I knew them apart.
Well, when did they get lead out of gasoline? Was that like 87?
Oh, Lord.
So I think it was earlier than that, 70s. To be honest.
You think so? I don't know. I think it went into the 80s. I really think that it was late 80s. But
so
I don't know.
It was,
I grew up during that time frame, so I inhaled a lot of lead, so don't trust me.
They were getting lead out of, like,
you
so
were
I can tell you this
choosing,
for a fact.
Chewing
they
on
were getting,
fishing lures.
Yeah.
Licking
there deep. Was at least a essentially a concentrated push to remove lead from gasoline as early as 1974. And the reason that I know this is that the Firebird that I own, on the fuel gauge, it says, and on the actual fuel cap, it says unleaded fuel only, and that car was manufactured in August of 1974. And those are the original fuel caps and the original fuel gauge on it. So they were making the push at that time to get the leaded gas off the markets.
So leaded gas was banned in 1996.
Wow.
No shit.
But leaded gas banned. Damaged catalytic converters. So leaded gasoline vehicles that could not use leaded gasoline started getting produced in 1975. So.
Okay, so then the Firebird was one of the first unleaded fuel-only vehicles. Oh, that's kind of cool to know.
In 96.
Yeah.
My dad had
a convertible
that needed leaded gasoline. If you didn't use leaded gasoline, it would wear out the seals and it would just generally get damaged.
So, fun fact, most aviation gas is still leaded.
Of course.
That's what the contrails are.
it's because
us getting
dumber. It's high compression ratios and
No. Our generation wasn't lead. Our generation is microplastics.
Yes.
We got so much microplastics in us, we're lucky to even be able to.
Yes.
Inside us.
They're inside us.
So Richard Nixon signed the Clean Air Act into law in 1970, but that did not actually solve the problem of leaded gas. So it wasn't until 1996 that it was actually banned. Crazy.
Huh, gotcha.
Crazy what the interweb tells you.
It dropped out of use well before it was banned, I believe.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the major problems that the stair scene has.
Yeah, let's stair get into scene. It.
Oh.
What's our timestamp?
They drop an F-bomb. Yeah.
Well.
When they fall down the stairs in medieval Europe.
Yeah. So Ted's wearing full armor, and he falls down the stairs. And presumably, he falls out of his armor while he's falling down the stairs. Why is the armor still man-shaped?
I would like to address this from multiple different angles.
Yeah, the armor is still man-shaped. It still looks like there's somebody in the armor, yes.
So, thing number one is that staircase is in the wrong direction. Most staircases went in the... what would it be? The counterclockwise direction, and so that the people fighting from the top down, because everybody back in the day would swing a sword with their right hand. That was a tower. It was a spiral staircase. So that staircase was going clockwise. So therefore, the people on the way up had the advantage. Thing number two, and I actually wrote a paper senior year in college about the metallurgy of medieval plate armor and the effectiveness of it against essentially the English longbow. And I did an entire engineering study on this about the only thing that could pierce plate armor at that time when they went back in the 1500s would have been a bodkin arrow at full draw at about 180 pounds at a pretty much a 90 degree angle to the surface of it. Everything else would just sprang off.
So not an AP.
And that's why. Huh?
So not an AP.
Yeah, exactly. The guy who's just like, and he just stabs him right through the heart. I was like, oh, God, that armor sucks. Like, he would have been sitting there like, bang, 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 for quite some time.
Now, what you do is you aim for a joint. You don't go through the center of the armor.
Yes, and so, again,
that's what I do.
That brings me to one of my favorite stories, and one of the battles that I researched heavily for this paper is the Battle of Agincourt. And one of the things with the Battle of Agincourt is, I don't know how familiar you guys are with it, but the listeners,
familiar.
Maybe they are, maybe they aren't. It happened during the Hundred Years' War in 1415. The English were rolling around the French countryside. And back in the day, armies really didn't, like, engage. They did this whole, like, we're just going to kind of circle around
each other. No, yeah, it was all about maneuver.
Posturing.
Yeah, and, like, sow salt into the fucking peasants' fields and just do all kinds of awful shit.
In general, if you started an engagement, you were at a disadvantage. So you always wanted to be reacting.
So both forces essentially met at Agincourt, and a couple of like baseline conditions were happening. One, the entire English army was suffering from dysentery at the time. Two, it had rained for 3 or 4 days prior, so the entire field was mud. And then three, because of this, the British had been encamped for a couple of days, and they had been able to cut down a bunch of trees and turn them into, I forget what these things were called, but like the logs that came out of the ground at like 30 degrees, and then they sharpened the ends.
Palisade?
Yes. Is that a palisade? Is that the name of it? And the reason that you made a palisade back in the day is when a heavy cavalry charge came in the direction of your line, horses will not jump over something that's not perpendicular out of the ground. If it's an angle, they'll turn and run. They'll impale on it. They'll just turn and run.
Yeah, they'll back, so they'll the back morning, away.
Yep, so the morning of the fight kicks off. It's foggy. It's still rainy. The English essentially put their archers right on the backside of the palisade with their men-at-arms, essentially like archer men-at-arms, archer men-at-arms, archer men-at-arms, in this big fucking U that they've put in the battlefield. And they're fighting with no pants on. They have upper body like armor and stuff, but like their dicks and ass is hanging out so that they can shit while they fight, which is amazing if you think about it. And so the French...
Do I have to think about it? Yeah. Must
I
think about this?
You don't have to think about it, but from like a historical like standpoint, like that's just fucking bonkers. They're like,
it was truly
like,
a great day in poop.
Richard the Lionheart or whatever, the Shakespeare, like that play is about this, but it doesn't mention the fact that the guys are just wearing like a cloth strip over their dicks so that they can just like shotgun shit fart.
Well,
the
versions we
battle.
Read, the versions we read don't mention it because there's been so much historical corrections and revisionism. I'm sure the original Shakespeare's got tons of dick
So anyways, at the time, the way that the two armies worked is the British essentially had heavy cavalry. That was the shining, you know, those were their fighter jets at the time, right? You had the heavy cavalry of the British, the heavy cavalry of the French, and then the British also had men-at-arms, and then they had bowmen, longbowmen, like the guys who would take those 180-pound draw, 6-foot bows, and they would loft the arrows at a 45 or whatever degree angle, and just kind of litter the Game of Thrones style, like litter the sky. The French, on the other hand, had a much more defensive, they were crossbowmen, and they... Crossbows were incredibly effective at short ranges because you could fire a shitload of them, right? Like you just kind of like wheeled your crossbow up, and it was like the machine gun. But in this battle, you're on French territory. The French essentially find out that the British are kind of holed up, and they essentially start I believe it was a 4-wave. Don't quote me on that. Charge at the British line with heavy cavalry. You know,
4-wave.
The straight up. Game of Thrones, Braveheart, Warhammer, not 40K, horses, armor, lances, everything. The first wave comes into this U, and then the horses hit the fucking skids, but they can't stop because the field is mud, and they slide towards the palisade. And what's going on at this time is now you're in a U, and the longbowmen are shooting you point blank. Right between at that point in time, with a bodkin head, a longbow can just easily thump right through armor, and so they're just killing knights, which was against chivalric code, because chivalric code was like the knight would be like, "I will capitulate," and then you're like, "Please come back to my tent, and you can bang my wenches and drink my wine." But no, now they had the common people just murder fucking these people, and then the second wave came in. And right as the first wave was starting to disengage, the second wave slid into them, and then the third and the fourth, and it was a fucking massacre of the French troops. And not necessarily the French troops, the French nobility. And that's why Agincourt was bad. And that is why the English give the fucking peace sign to the French as a big fuck you, because it was the longbowmen who slaughtered their fucking nobility on that morning on that field.
No, the peace sign is palm towards the person.
I know, it's this. They can't see it in the video, but yes. But that's the whole thing, is it's the longbowmen who are fighting with their dicks hanging out, just point blank in these French knights right in the head with these bodkin heads.
Oh, man. Yeah. Do you think there's anything more satisfying? It's wild. Do you think there's anything more satisfying than dropping a deuce while you're killing a man?
But you're not dropping a deuce.
I would.
Like, you're like, but yeah, I mean, you're you
turbo,
know how a
turbo shitting
hippo takes a shit with his little tail that like flings shit all over. Yeah, that's what's coming out of your ass. It's just like,
oh my.
What is this stories from Bill history? And Ted?
Amazing.
You want to know the best part about? I'm so excited I got to tell this story.
I just like that you spent. I like that you spent more time on the summary of Agincourt than you did on Bill and Ted. I like that.
No, I was a pretty good student in college. I was much better at math and engineering than I was at history and English or whatever. And back even all the way into high school, that was the only like. What we call group three, so the humanities, whatever. That's the only time in my life I've gotten an A+ on a humanities paper.
Yeah.
I was so proud of it when I turned it in. Nice. And my teacher was like, this is fucking incredible. This is awesome.
You should have just done military history from there.
Yeah.
I do have two questions, though. Back to my original questions. One, did you cite Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure in that paper?
Yeah.
Two.
No, I did not.
Two. Did old English keeps or forts actually have suits of armor on display for decoration, or were they just using them? Because I know it's a modern thing, but I wouldn't think there would be the same.
Ooh, I don't know the answer to that. I feel like back in the day, those suits of armor were like a fighting man's kit, right? Yeah. Like, so if
they were somebody's quarters.
Yeah, so if you were like a prince or whatever, who that's your gear, like you have it in your like your gear locker, right? Like, oh man, I got to go suit up and go fight. Like, let me get my gear.
I don't know. There's something very medieval about showing off your killing devices. That seems very much like legitimize my power kind of move.
Yeah, but still, wouldn't that make this armor be like the local armor for this castle? Why would someone...
Instead of it being, like, high-end stuff, it's actually just garbage.
No, instead of being, like, an enemy's armor. So why would the guy try to kill the person in this armor?
That's true, yeah.
So he
basically just killed one of his squires, essentially.
Yeah, I think you're kind of right, though, that, like, probably they would have recognized it, right?
Yeah.
Also, the guy's on his back like a turtle, so why wouldn't you try to ransom him? Because ransoming captured knights is really profitable.
Yeah, but I mean that he's wearing the same kit that you'd be wearing, right? Like he's wearing the same uniform and colors and everything else. Like you wouldn't just be like, "Oh, you're an intruder."
Yeah,
you know, if they snuck into your castle and put on your armor and then was running around, you wouldn't be like, "Ah, fuck you." I mean, maybe you would. Who knows?
I might.
I like it. Well, I don't. Well, who cares what you don't like? I care.
So, all in all, do we keep this on the list? What do we do now? What happens to us?
I gotta watch the second one.
No, I guess we could say we do keep it on the list, because there are three of them now. So.
Yep, they're sequels, we get to vote on it.
Honestly, I'm gonna vote no.
So. I say keep it.
Of course you do.
Just because I want to watch The Bogus Journey, then I want to see like old fat Bill and Ted in the third one.
I don't know, for this one just really rubbed me wrong for some reason. The cringe factor and the how stupid the characters were. I don't know. It made me embarrassed. And I gotta go with no.
Really?
Yeah. I feel like immature saying that. I don't know why. It makes me feel like I'm incredibly immature, but I just couldn't get into it.
I'm going to agree with Adam because I think the second movie is going to be even more immature. And that's what I watch.
Yeah.
I think I'm immature for having this reaction. They couldn't shut up and like it.
With like the thought process of like, oh, this is a product of its time. We have to be aware of it being the product of its time, sort of a thing.
No, I think it was just me. Like I felt embarrassed for the characters.
Oh, gotcha.
They're kind of embarrassing caricatures of like 80s California teens.
Yeah,
and they're just so dumb.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess that is true. I don't know. I just get, to be perfectly honest, I was just enjoying the fact that whenever I was pausing the movie, the like John Wick version of Keanu Reeves kept on popping up in the corner of Amazon Prime to show that he was dead. And just like seeing the comparison between like young Keanu Reeves and, you know, battle hardened Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
I kind of enjoyed that. So
he's all jowly now, I bet.
A little bit. But he does have like the mutton chops, so I kind of cover that up now. So
this movie ties into the whole 80s optimism thing that we were talking about before. Between this showing, you know, two ambiguously stoned rebel teenagers that can, you know, save the day, and Revenge of the Nerds shows that nerds can save the day. There was a lot of movies that showed like cis white male insecurities being saved, you know, like where it wasn't now where it's like more inclusive. It was back then, it was a very narrow focus, but it's like you could be a nerd, or you could be a stoner, or you could be emo, or you could be, you know, something else. But so long as you're white, it's this is what you're, you know, this is what we're trying to target our audience to.
Right.
Or like that's the primary demographic, you know, that you're going after. So like that's always going to be your hero. It's not necessarily about like inclusivity. It's more like, oh, who's going to pay to come see this garbage?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Maybe.
So I want to keep it. Matt wants to kill it. David wants to keep it. Mike, what do you want to do? You want to keep this on the list, or do you want to axe it?
Well, yeah, I want to talk about the bogus journey.
Gotcha.
Derek, hey, Derek, you gotta save us here.
I know it doesn't necessarily matter, but what do you?
My vote does not matter. It has been mathematically defeated.
But still, would you want to keep it on, or
there's still,
like,
the moral
is this
going to
be
victory.
Torture for you, or is this going to be
when we're all brutally murdered by Bogus Journey?
So this goes back to what's our purpose here? Like, are we here to watch 100 million variants of fucking Spider-Man, which all are essentially pizza, right?
Like, thousand times, yes.
Like, pizza, no matter how good or bad pizza is, it's still pizza. It's never terrible, right? We're here to find things that are amazingly terrible. And boy, were there some parts of Bill and Ted that were amazingly terrible. Like, they were fucking cringe, and I was just like, whoa.
Yeah.
Let's keep it. Let's absolutely keep it.
His speech convinced me. It made me feel things.
Except for Matt.
There's a lot there. Like, that was my feeling when I watched the movie initially, and then I watched it again today, and I was just like, I'm not really feeling this. And there were parts of it that I'm just like, ugh. But by the end of the movie, I was like, okay, it actually had like a wholesome message. Like, what the fuck? Like,
past
why
history.
Am I finding myself liking this? Yeah, like, pass history and be excellent to each other. And like, it was just
the whole like time travel thing that they were getting into, where they're like, okay, dude, we got to remember to go back to before my dad lost the keys.
I wanted to bring that up before we bounced on this podcast. I thought that was very clever. Like, when they were in the police station and they explained what they were going to do afterwards, and they kind of worked the whole like time mechanic in it. And then the best part of it is they didn't show them doing it.
Yeah. Like, afterwards, yeah. But my question is, like, okay, getting the keys, understandable. Why did you type a message to yourself on a typewriter when like anybody could come across that? And then also, you distract your father by putting a trash can over his head that you just drop out of the time stream, and you wrote Wild Stallions on. If that was my father, that would have pretty much cinched the fact that I would not, there's no way in hell I'd be getting out of going to military school. I would be in military school that night, that day.
Yeah.
He would yank me out of school to throw me into military school. But I agree with you. I thought that it was clever, especially during the time frame when, you know, we didn't have a lot of time travel movies or TV shows. It's pretty much just Doctor Who. Maybe an occasional Star Trek episode. Maybe. Because I think that... when did Quantum Leap come out? Was that before or after this?
That was right around the time.
I think it's 89.
Or I think it's before. I think it's... Oh, you...
You think it's before? I 89. It might be after. It's 89? Yeah.
Okay.
So it's after.
So it's after. So in a way, Quantum Leap owes everything it has to Bill and Ted.
Exactly.
No, I think Sliders owes everything it has to Bill and Ted.
Oh my gosh.
There you go.
Yes.
Good point, David. I like that. Well, in talking about the Doctor Who tie-in, the obvious correlation everybody draws is the phone booth is the TARDIS, because, you know, they're both phone booth shaped. But apparently, the original script for Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure had the time machine as a van, and it was the producers of the movie that forced them to change it into something smaller and easier for them to
film.
Something that was like cheaper to film, basically. Yeah. So.
At least they didn't do a hot tub.
Oh, so basically
the
joke is they're going through time. Picking up people and getting them high in their van, and that's why all yes. of the historical figures are going along with this.
Exactly.
And they're all bombed out of their gourd. I would buy that. Socrates Johnson would do that.
Socrates would be so all over it.
Yeah, Herman the Kid would definitely be all about that.
Herman
the Kid. Do we have Herman's head on the live action list?
Yes.
Of
course we do, because we hate ourselves and all of humanity.
Of course, we do.
So we all voted to keep this on,
except for me.
What's no? You did vote. Canonically, you did vote because you said that Derek's speech swayed you.
It so did sway me.
So you're back in. We know you're back in.
Yeah, you keep saying
so,
that.
David, what's next? Do we have a redemption?
So, would you let your kids watch this?
Oh!
I think for the historical archives, yes. I want them to know what a taste of the 80s is like, and maybe point out old, you know, I want to point out old forgotten technologies, like if there's, like, you know.
How old do they have to be before they get their first taste of the 80s?
What is this, PG or PG-13? I'm going to go with the I'm going to go with the MPAA's guidelines. So they could technically watch it now.
Yeah. Disappropriate. That's appropriate. This is something they should watch now.
I think you should wait till they actually know what a 69 is before you have them watch it.
I told you I was confused by
that. Joke's on Dallas. I think we all were confused when we saw it.
They don't know what they're talking about. 69, dude.
Yeah,
the joke. Well, at the time, the joke was just that they were thinking of the same number. That's what was funny. We didn't get Matt's and Derek's feedback on this. The other dads.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to require your children to watch this?
I got to say, the way it treats women really it really turns me off. So,
yeah.
But it's I wouldn't stop them, but I wouldn't introduce it to them.
You could use it as a learning opportunity.
Yeah.
Hey, kids, this is what not to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hey, kids, don't do this. See how these funny, fun, smart main characters are doing this? Don't do that.
Hey, kids, this is an example of a product of its time. This is just a quick flash of what it was like in the 80s. Be happy that you're in the 2050s. Or whatever it is.
When I introduce my daughter to what the 80s were like, this is not going to be a movie that I'm going to use to introduce her to it. But at the same point in time, if she's like, hey, Dad, let's watch this movie, I'm not going to say no.
There you go.
Yeah.
Caddyshack.
Yeah.
Caddyshack, yes.
There's just way better.
Red Dawn. You got to do Red Dawn.
Critters.
Oh, dude, we'll do fucking Red Dawn.
Gremlins.
When she's finally in, like, college, we'll do Risky Business.
Oh,
like,
my god.
There's some fucking good ones out there. That's not this.
That you're going to watch Risky Business with your daughter? Doesn't he, like, have sex with a prostitute on a train?
Doesn't he fuck a prostitute on a train? Yeah, hell yeah, he does. But all you know right. what? She's got to understand
worker,
why people
sorry,
are fucking
worker.
Sliding yes, across their living room in
sex
a button-down.
Sex walker in steam-powered automotive vehicle.
What?
I like it.
All I'm saying is that there are much better movies that are indicative of 80s culture than...
This feels very California this. 80s, not general 80s.
Yeah.
And honestly, if I was
going to
do... if I was going to do California 80s and really... I think Fast Times is a much better California 80s movie than this.
An insurmountable pile of wonderful awfulness.
Okay, I've got a redemption for the movie thingy.
Okay.
I wanna pull the Dungeons and Dragons movie, the 1999 one, off.
Ooh. Fuck you.
Wow.
Yep.
Yep.
Wow. I want to pull it off because it is hot fucking trash.
No.
It is so, Adam.
Wow.
Don't argue this. It's fucking trash.
Yes, but it's our trash.
Yeah. It does belong to us. Actually, it is our garbage.
Actually,
it's so bad.
Can we affect the movie list, David? Because this opens up a whole new realm of possibilities for
you. Yeah, I don't have any other opinions on the cartoons. And I just did a movie. I've actually done the last two movies.
Yes, you did.
I think that you've done like all the movies, haven't you?
Yeah.
Or all the live action movies, at least.
Oh, wait. You guys have The Last of the Mohicans 1975 on here, but we don't have Last of the Mohicans.
I really wanted to surprise you with that one.
Oh, no.
God damn it. Guess what we're adding?
Last of the Mohicans.
Last of the Mohicans.
Well, first we have to watch Last of the Mohicans 1975 and see if we want
I'm
to keep
okay
it on,
with that.
So.
I
do you, and then we get do you know anything one. About the 1975 version?
No, I don't.
No,
I don't.
But it's terrible.
It's horribly racist. It's 1975, so it's got to be like a bunch of Italian people pretending like they're Native American.
Okay, first of all, it's animated.
Oh,
is it really? Hey, will you guys allow me to add a couple of movies to the movie list?
No.
Please?
No. I'm sure. I don't care. Yeah. I don't give a shit.
Yeah, okay. I think we actually had a point of business without you like a year ago, something like that, where we went over the movie list in a little bit more detail and we added and took stuff off. So I think it's very fitting and very fair for you to add a few things to
it. I'd like to add three films. I'd like to add Dungeons and Dragons 2023. The new one. I really enjoyed it, and it was a lot of fun.
I think it was good. I just don't know what we would get out of it because it was a good movie. So.
Well, if everybody here has watched it, then we can talk about it not on podcast. That's all.
I haven't watched it.
I thought it was fun.
It was
a fun movie. It was total fan service, whatever. All right, second movie, I'd like to add the Final Fantasy movie from 2001.
Oh, Spirits no.
Isn't that on there already?
Oh, yeah.
Did I not add that? That seems like something I should have added.
No, it's not in here.
Is this the Spirits Within?
It's the one that came out that was all like CG and it went in the theaters and it wasn't that great.
Yeah.
Spirits Within, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's the one that got a lot of hype, a huge amount of hype, and then got let down. But if you watch it now, it is actually a good movie.
No, it's not.
By today's standards,
it's
no.
That's why I want to add it. It's a decent movie. It's just, yeah. And then the real Last of the Brohicans.
I didn't like the Final Fantasy movie because it just didn't feel like a Final Fantasy movie. It didn't with the rest of the games.
You kind of have to divorce it from the actual Final Fantasy oeuvre or like the Final Fantasy feel. Because you're right, it's basically just like a dystopian future. But if you go in watching it thinking it's a dystopian future movie, then it's actually pretty decent. So.
Yeah, it's kind of like the same, like the Super Mario Brothers movie back in the 90s. So long as you don't go into it thinking that it's a Super Mario Brothers movie, then it's fine.
But that's the beauty, is Final Fantasy can be anything.
Oh my
because
God.
Because it's the Final Fantasy.
What? Because it's the final, and the reason that they said the final
fantasy.
We're all off.
Oh, God.
We're killing Adam. I'm dying a little bit too.
I just want to let you know that Final Fantasy VII is not the best Final Fantasy.
Me?
I don't know about that.
It's like the most mid fantasy.
What other Final Fantasy was supposed to be a hard boiled noir series that based in New York that then got turned into some psychopathic acid trip fever dream?
All of them.
I have actually never played 8, but I was nice. Bullshitting with Tuna, who you know, Adam, today, and he was like, dude, Final Fantasy, we were talking about Final Fantasy, he's like, I want my Final Fantasy story to come off the rails. He was like, Final Fantasy was 8 was incredible, like you had this guy, and you had this sword, but it was also a gun, and it was called a gunblade.
Final Fantasy, it gets shit on a lot, but it was actually one of my favorites, to be honest.
Yeah and he was like, it was a great story, it's one of my favorites. Yeah. He's like, but at the end of the game, we're on the moon.
It is like fundamentally on the broken,
moon.
Though,
well, nobody can explain why you're on the fucking moon, but you're on the moon.
Well, eight was made within a year.
Eight was made within a year, but it's fundamentally broken because you can actually mid-max that game in like 5 minutes, and then like the rest of it's just a breeze because of the draw system that they have associated with it. But it is the storyline is actually, well, it's a fever dream from an acid addict, but still, it was good.
But that's what I want out of my Final Fantasy. Like, I want my story to not make sense. When I get to the 75% point, I just want to be like,
yeah.
Well, that just came completely unglued. Okay.
I feel like that's most JRPGs, though.
That's true. Like, Chrono Trigger, I think, did the same thing.
Tales of Symphona. When they just start going to another planet.
I want the fake bad guy, and then I want the secondary fake bad guy, and then I want the tertiary fake bad guy, who we have no idea who the fuck he is until the last 10% of the game.
And then
I want his form, and then his final form, but then his, this is not my final form. That's what I want.
Yeah. And then the good guys win because of Gaia.
The good guys win because they drive a fucking Rolls Royce through a barrier, like in Final Fantasy 15.
I like a good game that you could die of old age.
Oh, nice.
There's only a few of them out there, but, you know, just a game that you could play so long that your character actually could die of old age.
Final Fantasy 15.
Die of old age.
I'm now 55 and I'm going to die. Fuck you.
It's like Ash Ketchum. He's like some 55-year-old guy still carrying around Pikachu.
Well, Ash Ketchum.
I've had enough of this.
The whole theory about Ash Ketchum is that he's actually immortal. If you actually watch the first episode of Pokemon, he sees the Pokemon that grants a wish whenever it flies overhead. And then he stays the same age forever after that because he wants to be immortal.
Whoa.
He made the wish when he saw immortal.
I didn't know that.
That's like the leading fan theory. That's the reason why he never ages, whereas several of the other characters do.
How fucking terrible would it be that you wished yourself immortal before puberty? How fucking awful would that be?
Yes. That'd be
horrific. You can't drink sake. You can't do anything.
Although you're also like 10 and still experiencing the joys of life because like your brain is constantly like not forming the memory properly.
Everything is still new to you. Yeah, it's true. And you have a lot of energy.
Maybe that's why
I'm tired all the time.
He never learned. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
He could never wrinkle his brain. Yeah.
Ash Ketchum, smooth brain.
I played that game.
Nice.
Right after Sun and Moon.
Yeah.
So, speaking of time travel and puberty, it's amazing the way I don't have the mental fortitude to watch a 30-year-old school play that I nominally took part in.
I wouldn't want to watch it either.
30-year-old school play that you took part in?
Yeah, I got a VHS tape that I digitized for Father's Day.
And it's of you in a school play 30 years ago?
Kind of.
What was this?
This was Sandberg.
Was this in D.C.?
Sandberg?
What?
Oh my god.
I don't even remember someone plays at Carl Sandberg.
Do you watch those like new SNL sketches with the students who all dress in the school shirt and turn the stage lights off between vignettes?
Yes, I do.
That BS. It's exactly what it looks like.
Oh, really?
That's crazy.
That's insane. Wait, who were in these plays? We weren't in these plays, right? Was it just you, or
I didn't do?
I was actually part of the opening act.
Really?
We sang a few Christmas. We sang a few songs about Christmas and one song about Hanukkah.
Wow. Very good.
How inclusive of you guys!
It's about right for the 90s.
Yeah. The camera operator really zoomed in so you could see the perfunctory boredom on our faces because we were not coached at all on how to present to an audience.
Nice. Good times.
It's interesting that you can see that. I wouldn't want to watch that either. That sounds like hell.
Yeah, they announced that they were selling the tapes before the intermission because I think they're trying to get everyone's money during the intermission before they actually saw the performance part of it.
Nice. So this was our middle school, right? This was like 7th, 8th grade.
Seventh.
I think I remember seeing a play at, or like a some sort of performance that was supposed to be like a like to get you ready for high school performance, and it was like a direct ripoff of a Saturday Night Live sketch. Like a kid didn't want to take his shirt off because he felt he had too much hair, and they make him take his shirt off for gym, and he takes his shirt off, and he's like a gorilla basically underneath.
I didn't see
there
it.
There was another kid that had like a belly button that stuck out like a foot or something like that.
What?
I don't think actually I think this might have been Mad TV, not actually.
That doesn't sound real.
Well, obviously it wasn't real. I mean, it was supposed to be. It was all play for fun, for jokesies.
So wait a minute. Are you describing a play you saw? Or are you describing a TV show you saw one time?
Both. There was like a TV show that I saw that had this in it, and that somebody ripped it off for a play, and I thought it was something that I watched at Sandberg. I don't know.
I feel like I have a fuzzy memory of this.
Yeah, I believe you.
Yeah. But we were all in like separate classes in Sanford, so.
Yeah, they split us up because they knew we were in trouble. Yeah,
that's right. They knew that we were going to own that school. We were too popular when we were together. But separate, we could be controlled.
Yeah, that was the problem.
All right, crazy, David. Are you going to add that video to the list, or are we going to have to?
No.
Oh, my God, no.
No.
That would be brutal. I'd vote it off so fast.
Yeah, I was constantly stopping to take breaks trying to watch it.
Like, oh, this is so cringy, I'm going to walk away and go smoke a cigar. Oh, this is so cringy, I'm going to walk away and drink a fifth of vodka.
Okay, let's move on to reverse retcon.
Let's get it over with.
Reverse retcon.
We want cartoons 26 hours a day.
Do it. So what is index 2122?
2122. Is everybody on the full cartoon list? I'm not there yet.
2122?
Oh, that's right on. Oh.
Silver Surfer.
Oh,
1996.
Yeah. Wow, you rolled it right away.
Wow.
Huh. 96. I remember this being pretty good, actually.
I've seen the whole thing. Yeah. I've watched every episode.
I remember
of
it
this.
Being pretty good, too.
What was it pretty decent? Was it good?
It's weird. I liked it. It's weird. I liked it, but it wasn't like genius. It's ups and downs.
Interesting.
But I think it's going to be worth a watch.
All right.
I remember watching this show as a kid. Like, so yeah.
I'm surprised I haven't heard of it.
It really went under the radar.
You didn't watch it.
But it's very true to like the original Kirby version of the character.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, wait, they made a Silver Surfer movie in 2020? What?
Mm-hmm.
They did?
Yep.
2020. Huh.
Oh, 2020? Yeah, yeah, no.
Don't know anything about that.
Not that I'm aware of.
Was it live action? What are you looking at?
It looked like it was live action.
Yikes.
Go back and take a look.
That makes me fearful.
But, David, what episode are we watching?
Number 8.
Episode 8. Excellent. So, Silver Surfer Episode 8 is called Antibody. The Surfer is the only person who can save a dying Galactus, but will he assist his former master, and can he even save him? ?
Wow, this is going to be deep in the run.
Time. That's right. So, Antibody.
All right. Silver Surfer is my favorite superhero.
Oh, that's good.
Oh, shit.
Excellent.
Don't be afraid, Matt. You have to be brave.
I will be brave.
This. Be brave.
I will be brave.
On a future episode of Amazingly Terrible, we'll be watching Silver Surfer, Episode 8, Antibody. But next time on Amazingly Terrible, we'll be watching The Christmas Toy, Jim Henson's 1986 live-action puppeteered made-for-TV movie. Very special episode.
Yes, it is.
Beautiful.
Well, for Amazingly Terrible, I've been Matt.
For Amazingly Terrible, I have been Adam.
For Amazingly Terrible, I've been David.
I like how, like, we're slowly going around.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
I know, right?
So dramatic.
Amazingly Terrible, I've been Mike S. Preston, Esquire.
There we go.
And nice. It's your boy, Socrates Johnson.
See ya. Teddy. Look. Or I do prefer Herman the Kid. And since nobody has done it, I just have to go. San Dimas High School football rules!
Amazingly Terrible is produced by David and Adam. Music by Josh Woodward. Send your email to monotonouslyterrific@amazinglyterrible.com.
You're listening to Amazingly Terrible, the podcast that asks, if George Carlin came from the future and gave you a time machine, would you actually research your history class, or would you become a lone wanderer in the time stream? I'll edit that together in a better way.
just try it again. Yeah, just try it again. We'll give you time.
You're not.
Well, the problem is, I don't actually.
You're not going to finish Pirates of Dark Water in time to edit this.
He didn't wind his watch enough.